Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. A lot to get into here on a Tuesday. Let's not waste any time. Let's bring in our main man, Brandon Deutsch. Brandon, how are you?
Doing great, doing great. Angels and Dodgers both looked good the past few games, so we'll see if that continues. We know the Dodgers will continue to play well, but will the Angels? The Marlins are now 0-5. You know, they're due for a win at some point, so we'll see how long the Angels can keep it going. But great to see Mike Trout looking like himself.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen this a lot of times where he looks like himself and he gets hurt. So I'm really hoping their resolution this year should be Trout stay healthy the whole year. That's our season goal, right?
Like, yeah.
Another great year, because they're not going to go to the playoffs. So you might as well have these certain goals for certain individuals and development.
It was a big night last night. And yes, you mentioned the local teams that won. But for women's college basketball, it was when the numbers come out, probably the most watched night in terms of back-to-back games in women's college basketball history. You had the Daiwa, Louisiana State. You had USC, UConn. Caitlin Clark did her thing. Juju Watkins, Paige Buckets. I love that nickname. Angel Reese. Your thoughts on, again, I think that this has been the case the entire tournament, and it's going to continue as we go to the Final Four with Caitlin Clark. It's just that women's college basketball has really become one of, if not the most popular sports in college athletics right now, and for the first time ever, and I know this was the case maybe a year ago to a certain extent, more people seem to be intrigued by the women's tournament than the men's tournament.
Yeah, I think it happens when you have like generational talents. And I know, you know, we use that term a little loosely now because there's like five generational talents in women's basketball in college right now that are all going to be the five best players in the NBA, right? Or at least four of them, in Cameron Brink, Juju Watkins, Paige Buchers, and obviously Caitlin Clark. And look, Angel Reese is also very good. She's still deciding whether she's going to come back to school, but that LSU-Iowa matchup was electric. I've started, Arash, there's a certain thing that happens in sports, and it's called hate, right? Like, there's a lot of hate speech on players. People love to hate. They like to hate more than they like to praise a lot of the time. And once you see the women's athletes getting the same level of hate,
yeah,
I've noticed they've made it. You know, and I'm starting to see that. I'm like, wow, like people hate, like accounts that are like always like, oh, you know, the Lakers aren't doing this, like blah, blah, you know, those types of troll accounts are now doing it about the women. So I'm like, that tells me, oh my God, they've made it. They have all the viewers. The viewership is there. The product is as good as it's ever been. I really love it for women's sports. Yeah.
What do you think it is transferable to the WNBA? And when I say that, I mean, there's a lot of people who have been wondering, you know, if you're a senior or if you, again, a junior, like, you know, stay in the college game because we have, to your point, such a connection with these teams, and some fans or people on social media hate these teams. I mean, there's a connection with the fan base and these college teams. You know, that's not the case yet with the WNBA, but with these transcendent generational talents going to the WNBA, how quickly do you think that league can grow?
I think it'll take a little longer. Like you mentioned, I think that the college is a huge thing with women's sports and all women's sports, volleyball, all sports in general. College is huge. It's a community. It's like, there's a certain pride. Like, I went to school there, right? Like, a whole state of Iowa is going to love Caitlin Clark, and she will attract viewers in the NBA, the WNBA. But for the most part, I mean, it's the legacy of the college. Like, the WNBA, like, I guarantee you, if you ask most fans that are watching this right now, new fans, they can't tell you who won the WNBA championship before the Aces started their two like after that. You're like, you know, they can't tell you about the Sparks dynasties, you know, Lisa Leslie, everybody, Candace Parker, they maybe know, but the newer fans are really into these players. Yes, the players can bring that attraction, but not to the level it's getting in college yet, in my opinion. I don't think they're going to be able to bring that directly to the NBA. Maybe Caitlin Clark, but the other three, Bukers, Brink, like, I don't know. Juju, like, Juju's going to bring college back. Yeah. Like, USC is on a roll, and they're going to be on a roll for the next few years, as long as she stays.
I mean, the fact that she's a true freshman and will be back for a couple of years, I think is obviously so great for USC and so great for the college game, where you know she's going to come back. Obviously, in the women's game, there's not a one-and-done process there. For the first time, we have two teams, two colleges, sending a team for the men's tournament and the women's tournament in North Carolina State and UConn. Again, as we touched on, more people may be focused on the women's tournament, but a lot of interesting storylines in the men's tournament. Your thoughts on the men's Final Four?
Yeah, I'm going to be completely transparent with this. I think this is the weakest tournament of all time for the NCAA. Yeah. I mean, I think it's funny because women's college basketball is the best tournament of all time. It's been the best product. And I think the men's is just the worst product. I struggle to watch these teams play right now. The product's bad. By the way, it's the worst draft class in the history of the NBA, some executives say. So it's not like there's any like insane freshman like Zion. Next year it'll change because Cooper Flagg is going to be at Duke, and he's a guy that is known as like, okay, he's like going to be a top 20 NBA player if he develops correctly. Like most people think that, like projected number one overall pick. And there's some other guys like the year after his draft is really good. That'll change it. To be honest with you, Ross, like UConn is just so dominant. Purdue's dominant. It's going to be those two teams. Like I want to say NC State will win. I know they've been doubted before, but let's be real. DJ Burns is great. There's no way he can guard Zach Edey, 7'4". They don't have anybody on that team that can guard him. UConn does, right? Because they have Clinigan or whatever his name is, who's 7'2" and is also an NBA prospect. This draft class, by the way, is so bad, and it's not against Zach Edey, nothing against him, but he's going as a lottery pick, being as slow as he is. And yes, he's dominant in college, but Arash, you and I both know Davis can barely play the center in today's NBA game. You have to be agile. You have to be quick. The reason why Wemby can do it at 7'4" is because he can shoot threes and he's quick. Yeah. Chet Holmgren. Like, if you're slow, you don't last in today's NBA. That's just the name of the game. And as good as Zach Edey's been in college, him being a lottery pick just shows the strength of this draft. That's all I'll say. So the product in men's this year is really bad. I wouldn't be surprised if we see all-time low numbers for the championship, or at least the Final Four this upcoming week.
Yeah, and to your point, like also, I mean, obviously UConn is heavily favored. I mean, if that's a blowout and all their games during this tournament and the tournament a year ago have been blowout, that, you know, again, impressive run for them, but doesn't really lend itself to people tuning in to a good game. Speaking of men's basketball, USC in the search of a new men's basketball coach, or a first big hire, or a first big hiring search for new athletic director Jen Cohen. Your thoughts on the Andy Enfield tenure? Again, it's not easy to win at USC. Did lead them to a Sweet 16, Elite Eight, had four or five consecutive 22 win seasons. Again, I think my assumption or read on this is either he was on the hot seat, or he was like going into a lame duck season with a like athletic director who probably wants to bring in her own coach. So instead of just sticking around for a year, kind of like the Chip Kelly situation, let me go to a new situation here. But your thoughts on that?
Well, I think Enfield is into coaching. I don't think Chip Kelly cares about coaching anymore. You know, I think that's like a big distinction. Like nothing against Chip. Like he's had a legacy, an excellent career, but he's just so, you know, he's like, he doesn't like the way the game has changed. And that's why he went to be the OC at Ohio State. Less responsibility. No, he didn't like to recruit anyways. We all know that. I mean, you know it in Manhattan Beach. It's where he lived, right? Like he didn't like recruiting. That was a big thing. Enfield, excellent recruiter. Don't know if he was ever a great coach, but he was an excellent recruiter, and that's what got Mobley there. And obviously Mobley was so dominant as a freshman, and there were some good players around him able to get to the Elite Eight. I do think there were times where I think he had to leave, Arash, personally, because this year there's so many, and I know they played great at toward the end of the year, but they had to make the tournament. They were a preseason top 25. Yeah. If you're a preseason top 25 with all the media on your case with Bronny James, with Isaiah Collier is going to be a first round pick, You gotta live up to the hype. And they simply did it. He just didn't have that locker room in check until the second half of the season. He didn't have them playing. I know they had injuries, and that mixed with all the chokes in the first round over the past few years since the Elite Eight, despite them, I think, should be favored in some of those games, like against Miami. And I know Miami ended up making that final four, but I think they should have won that game. Remember the shot? And I think that combined really was like, okay, this is the boiling point, right? Like, we got to move on. And I, you know, it's going to look really different. I wouldn't be surprised if the whole team's transfers next year.
Well, they lost one of their big prospects, too, you know, and again, you go, say what you want about him, but he was a great recruiter, and Dandy, found a way to get talented players. But to your point, Brandon, when you bring in Isaiah Collier and you bring in these top 25 talents, and Collier was the number one prospect, you have to win. So it's one thing to recruit, but it's another thing to like actually lead these guys into the tournament.
Yeah, I was just going to say, sorry to interrupt you, Rush, and I want to have a distinction to our listeners, because I know we probably have a lot of UCLA fan listeners too, and they're like, Mick Cronin, what about this year with UCLA? It's different because these European dudes he brought in, no one knew how good they actually were. Like, Mara really can't play basketball yet. Like, he's young. And this was a transition year for UCLA. Complete opposite, you know, when people are calling for Cronin's job. Like, I think getting them to be 500 almost was an accomplishment. Considering Dylan Andrews was supposed to be their best player in Bona, these two guys, and Bona played, but Andrews played 5 minutes a game last year, 10 minutes, and he's supposed to be their guy. Different when USC has the expectations, right, and they fail.
You touched on it. Why is this draft class so weak? Again, Zach Edey, to your point, he looks like a perfect college player that's not going to – his game's not going to translate to the NBA. Isaiah Collier will obviously come out, and he'll be a first round pick, but what happened this year where like really there's no big names. Oh, you froze, Brandon. I think okay, I got you now.
Sorry about that.
Okay, yep, we got you. Yep, we got you.
My apologies. Yeah, the draft class is weak for a few reasons. I think the first is it's just there's, you know, we saw in the NFL a few years ago with quarterbacks, like Kenny Pickett was the top quarterback in that draft, and sure, it had Brock Purdy toward the end. He ended up being the best quarterback from that draft, but that was a weak year, right? Like versus this year with Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels and stuff like that. That's on the NFL side. Same thing with the NBA. Last year, we had Victor Wembanyama, this great draft. And really, it wasn't a great draft, honestly, Raj. I mean, like Scoot, I think, will be good, even though he's had a horrible start to his career. Brandon Miller's really good. Wemby's really good. But other than that, it's like a bunch of role players, you know? Like that's kind of like last year's draft. There was star power at the top, similar to Ja Morant's draft, where it was him and Zion at the top. And then there were guys, that were good role players. A few turned out to be borderline stars. Might be the same in last year's class. This year, you're lucky to get a role player in the top five. Sarr has upside. The French guy plays for Perth, the Perth Wildcats, I believe. Yeah, and he's 7 feet. He plays defense, but his offense is a question. Rob Dillingham, who I think is probably the most talented offensive player in the draft, is small. He's 6'2", 176. There's questions about him, and he can't guard a parked car. So, I mean, it's just a fact, but he's an excellent offensive player. He's probably the surest bet to be like a Darius Garland or Tyrese Maxey type, but like he needs to work on things too. And the other guys, I can't even stomach watching the tape of this guy, Riss Archer, who they think might go number one. The guy wouldn't even be picked in the top 25 of last year or the year before his draft. And they're calling like this guy, I know French prospects we got to be careful with because of Killian Hayes and Dante Exum. And I know Wemby is like the generational. It didn't matter that he was French and Gobert. Like there's some that hit. But this guy is like, it's a joke. He's not going to be an excellent NBA player. Maybe he's like a maximum Trey Murphy type who's really good, but you know, a 3-and-D guy. That's who you're taking second or third, Arash. It just happens to be a year where there's not much talent. So you'd hate to get the number one pick in this year and watch. The Pistons, with their luck, are going to get the number one pick this year in a year they really, they should have gotten it last year or the year before. And I have some thoughts on how Wemby ended up in San Antonio. I don't know if that was a completely fair lottery. Let's be real there. I'm not trying to be a conspiracy theorist, but him ending up in San Antonio is kind of the perfect situation, right?
Yeah, we all kind of thought that when that happened, and Victor Wembanyama was watching where he was going to go, and And oh, surprise, surprise. It was to the San Antonio Spurs and Greg Popovich. Speaking of the NBA, I wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, two big games tonight. The Lakers are at the Toronto Raptors. The Clippers head to the Sacramento Kings. Clippers are in, you know, trending in the right direction in terms of winning three straight, five in a row on the road. Let's first start, get your thoughts on the Clippers game. And again, Malik Monk not playing for the Sacramento Kings. That should make that game a little bit easier for the Clippers.
Yeah, I would think so. But I promise you that game is going to be close. The Clippers are not going to be able, they haven't been able to put away teams. Every game's been close, except finally they were able to put away the Hornets the other night. The Clippers are to roll. If they play Dallas, I think that's a tough draw. I think Dallas is really good. Lakers, we know they should take care of business, but every time we say they should, they kind of don't. Like, remember when I came on here last week and I said the Pacers just got blown out by the Bulls? They're going to blow the Lakers out because the Lakers have won five in a row and they'll be lazy. That's just kind of, the team's kind of soft, Arash. It just is. I mean, it's tough. It's tough to build a culture, especially in Los Angeles, of hard-nosed, tough players. Somehow they did it in Miami. I wish it was the same culture here in L.A., but Ham just doesn't have that team locked in as much as other coaches do. I wouldn't be surprised if they lose one of those Raptors Wizards games, to be honest with you, Rosh. Like, I mean, like, they should win both. Those are gimmies. But back to back, like, you know, Davis has been dealing with the hyperextension. Like, LeBron is like, he kind of had to carry them to win that Brooklyn game. And he shouldn't have had to. That should have been a wipeout. And I'm really nervous about the three-guard lineup. Like, I think Ham should be fired on the spot if he tries to roll out Vincent, Dinwiddie, and Russell again. Like, there's nobody, not even a middle school coach would roll out a lineup of that for the Lakers. I mean, that is ridiculous. The Nets went on like an 18-6 run after that. I mean, he needs his privileges taken away if he does that. I mean, that's the only problem with Vincent coming back. I'm just being real. Anybody who knows ball just knows that's like, come on. And Darvin's gone after this year. Everyone knows it. Unless the Lakers win the championship, he's gone. There's going to be a new coach. Like, I feel bad. I wanted him to succeed so bad, but he's the reason they have 42 wins and not, you know, 55 at this point.
Why do you think he has, and you've brought this up from the beginning of the season in terms of like we all thought that they had the players to succeed. He just refused to play some of the more successful lineups. Again, and these are not just opinions. These are statistically speaking the best lineups, and also not just stats. Like when you go to their playoff run a year ago, just refused to play the best players and the best lineups. Was, again, he's not stupid and he doesn't want to like sabotage this team. Why do you think he refused to do that?
I think there's certain things in the locker room with chemistry that he's trying to implement, and I think that's part of it. Like, maybe Max Christie needs to get his bones more before he's a young kid. Maybe he needs to work more before he gets into, like, I don't know what that is. There's certain dynamics we don't know. We're not there every day, right? Like, at practice with the team. So, I mean, maybe that goes into it. Like, Vincent's a big team guy. Vincent does have moxie. I'll give him that. I love Vincent. I loved what he did in the postseason last year. Maybe that's why he's playing him a lot. But, you know, he's starting to implement better rotations, Arash. I just wish, like, I just really hope this three-guard lineup doesn't get to his head, because the three-guard lineup has never worked at any level in the history of basketball. I don't know why it goes through anybody's head. You need size. You need wings. And I know some of their wings are hurt, and they like Vincent's toughness on defense. Then take Russell out, or take, you know, take Dinwiddie out. Like, come on. For me, it's like, he dropped the ball this year. I think everybody knows it. I think Jeannie's been a little too lenient with certain people in the organization over the past few years. You know, I think the Vogel firing was about LeBron pressure, but I think she's given Pelinka too big of a leash, as well as other people in their organization. Whoever, by the way, whoever drafted Jalen Uchino needs to be fired. I'm sure Joey Buss, I know that report came out that he said it was Rob Pelinka who wanted Jalen Uchino. So they're already setting it up for Rob to be fired if they don't make a deep playoff. I just found that so funny, because what happens if it was actually Joey and he's like, well, I can't fire myself, so I'm going to put it on Rob Pelinka. I wouldn't put it past them. I like Joey, but, you know, obviously it's a business, and Joey's not losing his job. He owns part of the team, right? So I hope they get the ship going and have a deep playoff run so everything is fixed.
Last question before we head to break. I mean, how key is it for the Lakers as we're in the stretch run for them to be, I think there are two games back of the 7th seed. And again, if they're in that 7-8 seed, it's win and advance. And so, you know, it's within reach. I mean, how key is it for them to figure out a way to kind of, you know, just make up that ground. And whether it's the 7 or the 8 seed, just move up a little bit.
Well, it sucks that Booker turns into Zeus every time he plays the Pelicans, because, I mean, he averages 54 points per game over the past 3 games against the Pels. That hurt their chances. They really needed the Suns to lose that game, because it doesn't look like Sacramento is going to fall much further. They're big Clipper fans tonight, the Lakers, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Clippers are not going to fall into the play-in, so they need the Kings and the Suns to start losing and handle business. I think they'll finish with an 8 or 9. I doubt 7, but we'll see in this next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just so key when you can have a win in advance situation there where, again, it's not ideal to be in the play-in tournament, but if you are, you don't want to have a situation where you're playing a couple of games, or if you lose a game, one game, and your season comes to a close. But let's leave it there for now. As you touched on when we began the show, the Dodgers and the Angels win last night. Again, for the Angels, that's significant, because I don't know how many games they're going to win this season, but for the Dodgers, they are back to their winning ways. So we'll talk about the Dodgers, the Angels, and the current state of Los Angeles baseball when we come back right here on the Mightier 1090 in Southern California, the Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network.
We'll be right back with the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now, in a city where time disappears. We create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big, we go all night, and here everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Welcome back to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. Just as a reminder, if you have a question or comment or want to win tickets to an upcoming game in Southern California, Las Vegas, or Hawaii, call our hotline 310-400-0340. Before we went to break, Brandon, we were talking about the Lakers. I forgot to talk about the Clippers as well. We talked about the Clippers, but I wanted to get your thoughts on their first round matchup. It does not seem like there's a first round matchup that any Clippers fans like, whether it's the Pelicans, whether it's the Mavericks, whether it's someone else. Is there a matchup for them that you do like in the first round?
No. Plain and simple. They're not the Lakers in the sense they don't match up well against anybody because they don't have any bigs, Arash. Like, that's a problem. I mean, I guess New Orleans, but then they have Valanciunas who can cook you, right? Like, they have bodies. I'm just thinking of teams that are small. Like, Minnesota's not small. OKC would be probably a good matchup because they have Chet. They don't really have any other centers. And he's more of a 4, right? Like, that's why the Lakers always beat them pretty good. But they're not going to be able to play Oklahoma City, right? Unless it's in the second round.
Yeah.
Dallas has some bits. I mean, Lively can cook them. Gafford can cook them. The acquisitions of Gafford and both PJ Washington really hurt the Clippers' chances if they end up playing them. I guess New Orleans, considering Valanciunas plays like 20 minutes a game and then their other big is Zion pretty much. So, that's probably the best matchup, their best chance. But the Pelicans have really cooked them recently. So I don't know. I wouldn't be confident in any series for them.
Is there something that's working for them that they can kind of continue to do? Again, before they went on the road trip, we kind of talked about how that they've struggled. They've been a 500 or even below 500 team post the All-Star break. And now, you know, they've won 3 in a row on the road. They've won 5 overall away from home. Is there something that they're doing that they can kind of transfer over and kind of give them a chance to succeed in the postseason?
No, they never fix the problem. They don't prioritize getting a stretch big. They really need one. Zubac is not going to cut it against Jokic, against Rudy Gobert against any of those guys. And they're just kind of slow. They're like old and slow. Like, you know, like Harden's not as quick as he used to be. Lost a step. Kawhi and George are not as quick as they used to be. Powell is a good shooter, but he's not like extremely quick. Doesn't have like a rapid first step. He can get by guys, but not at an elite level. And Terrence Mann, yeah, he's pretty quick, but they just have a lot of wings. They can play defense. They'll need to play a lot of defense. I'll say that if they want to win series. It's like they need to hold opponents to less than 110 every game. Cause I don't trust their offense to get it going enough.
We began the show talking about the Dodgers and the Angels. Let's start with the Dodgers. What have you liked about the way they've played in winning their series against the St. Louis Cardinals and then winning the first game of their home stand against the San Francisco Giants?
Again, Dodger fans are not going to like this. I don't care about any games in the regular season. I just don't. They're going to win 110 games. Sure, it looks great. Yamamoto pitched well. Like, even guys that they didn't think were going to pitch well, like Gavin Stone. And at the end of the day, they look good. Mookie looks like the best player in the MLB. Will it happen in the postseason? Will they be able to do it? I mean, that's the number one thing. Otani's looked bad so far, like comparatively to what he looked like in the past. I mean, the guy already had three or four home runs and a 370 batting average on the Angels this time last year through equating like six, seven games that they've played, right? Like, or even eight. They might have even played, eight games? I mean, they've played more than anybody else. At the end of the day, like, that's a problem. I think Otani, it's a problem the way he's swinging the bat. We saw it toward the end of last season, anybody who was covering the Angels and watched the games, spinning off pitches, not keeping his head down. A lot of power is there. There's no reason why that with, you know, guys like Freeman and Mookie in between him, or, you know, even Muncy, guys like that, that he shouldn't be hitting. I mean, he goes in these lulls. Once he gets going, Arash, he'll be great. But he goes in these lulls. That's a serious problem for the Dodgers. I mean, especially with a lineup that really doesn't stay hot in the playoffs and historically in the past, they're going to need Otani to step up. And I just don't know if he can do that in the playoffs.
Is that something that was a problem or a concern? Again, transcendent talent, if there ever was one, in terms of being compared to Babe Ruth. But he went through his slumps as well. I mean, like if you're a Dodgers fan and as someone who has covered him for the last couple of years, is that would that be a concern to you?
100%. I mean, I think the Angels didn't have many big moments, but when he was on the Angels in a big moment, like bottom of the ninth, like he didn't really do anything. Ever. There's a one Texas series where he was good. He's not a great pressure hitter, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I feel like he's great earlier in the game to get you going. He can carry teams throughout the game. I think his true value is when he's hitting and pitching, because I think he's an excellent pitcher. And right now you're paying him $700 million. I know it's deferred to be a hitter right now. I mean, you don't know if his arm will keep up when he throws next year, how long it'll last.
Yeah.
He's an ace. He's got ace stuff. I think he's a top five pitcher in baseball when he's fully healthy. At the plate, he's a power hitter that's, you know, I feel like pitchers are starting to figure out a little bit more, which is why his average, is continuously throughout the second half of last season went down. And his power numbers, by the way, and it's starting out. Like right now, he'll get hot. He'll hit like 45 home runs. It'll be fine. And we'll be like, oh, he's an MVP candidate. But in the grand scheme of things, the empty stats don't matter. He needs to show up when it matters. And that bases loaded moment was really something we're going to keep seeing from Otani. That's not the guy you want up in those big moments. You want Mookie up. You want Freddie up. You even want Muncy up before Otani in those big moments, because he's kind of erratic with his swing. He'll swing at a lot of different pitches, right, that are out of the zone versus guys that really have a good approach to the plate. So I think Dodger fans, look, if they weren't watching the Angels, they probably don't care about the Angels, the Dodger fans, but they didn't see it. But someone who covers the team, like I saw it a ton. And that's not to say he's not excellent at baseball, because he is. Yeah. But I've seen a lot of pressure moments where he simply didn't do enough for the team to win.
Pitching has been a concern at the beginning of the season, but they will get some help at some point this summer. The expectation is Clayton Kershaw will be back. Walker Buehler will be back. That they're going to get a lot of these guys healthy. Is pitching a concern to you until they get guys who are on the injured reserve and not playing? I mean, are you concerned about their pitching staff?
No, I'm not, because Bobby Miller looks like an ace. That was a question mark, right? Like, how was he going to take a leap? I know it's one performance, but he looks like their best pitcher on the staff, him and Glasnow, who they traded for. oddly enough, Pepiot gave up 6 runs yesterday in his debut for the Rays after a great spring. So maybe they actually did win that trade. I know they had to pay Glasnow a lot of money. At the end of the day, I think like guys that they're bringing up, like you can put Kyle Hurd in there for a spot start. They can even bring up Nick Frasso for a spot start, their top pitching prospect. They have a lot of options, Arash, and I think it's going to be a little bit unfair when they get Walker Buehler and Kershaw back, because it's like Kershaw's your 5, right? Like Kershaw, yeah, he's deteriorating. He's pitched for like since the Ice Age, right? Like he's been in MLB for as long as I can remember, since he was 19 years old, which might never happen again. We might never see a 19-year-old American pitcher in the MLB. Yeah. By the way, that's just ridiculous. We see it Dominicans because they go and enter the system in the minor leagues at like 15, right? It's different. But at the end of the day, if he's your 5, like you're good. Like Glasnow is the Yamamoto, Glasnow, Bobby Miller, and Gavin Stone's a spot starter or like a long reliever. Like they have options. Talent wise, they have no issue. I just can't see him beating the Braves in the playoff series.
So that's the big one. I mean, if this team did all of that work, to your point, you know, sign Shohei Ohtani to a $700 million contract, bring on Yoshinobu Yamamoto to a $350 million contract, and they still lose in a championship series to the Atlanta Braves, that's not going to be good.
I don't just think it's possible. I think there's a 90% chance that happens. Like, I can't see them winning a World Series with Muncy at third base. You know, their defense is atrocious, in my opinion, as good as they will hit and pitch. That's my personal.
Why? Yeah. Really quick, you're breaking up third, a little bit. Yeah.
Muncy at third, I don't know.
Okay. Okay. The Angels began the season especially bad. Again, not only losing the first 2 games to Baltimore, but getting blown out. Since then, and since having a team meeting with manager Ron Washington, they've won back-to-back games. Again, you know, listen, small sample size, just the beginning of the season, but they've looked good the last 2 games. What have you liked about the way A, they're playing, but also B, the way Mike Trout has been playing?
Well, Trout's healthy, right? That's good. Surprised people are still pitching to him with, you know, Rendon in front of him. And Rendon, man, Arash, we got to start having a conversation. Is that the worst signing in the history of baseball?
Yeah.
It might be. I mean, it might be. He's 0-16 to start this year. His comments about his priority not being baseball haven't helped his case.
No.
I mean, if he was hitting 400 and said that, you'd be like, okay, because Anthony Edwards doesn't really love basketball. Like, he wanted to play football, but he dominates in the NBA, so he can say stuff like that. When Rendon says it, it's like, wow. And he's batting leadoff, and they're still pitching to Trout, right? I think Nolan Chanwal has shown a lot. I mean, his on-base streak. I think it's an incredible story that really no one's talking about simply because it's the Angels and they don't have Ohtani anymore. But close to 35 games to start his career, every game being on base, that was a home run pick by them, regardless of whether he develops any power ever. The guy just gets on base. And we saw, what did we see in Moneyball? What did Billy Bean want in the movie? Or, you know, it happened in real life. Guys that get on base. Does he get on base? Like, that's all that matters. They have a lot of guys that get on base. And in the end, Arash, they're going to be scrappy and they're going to be in games because of that, especially if their pitching holds up. They have a ton of decent pitchers. They don't have an ace, but they have a ton of decent pitchers. And if they can get on base and have those decent pitchers, they could get 80 wins. Absolutely.
You touched on Ron Washington having that moxie and having, you know, led a team to a World Series. What have you liked about Ron Washington as the new manager of this team?
I don't think there's a better man that could be in charge of a clubhouse that was in disarray. I mean, the guy, everyone loves him. He's a people's champ. The players love him. Yeah. He's got moxie. He instills grit in his players. And you saw that already in a Marlins game where, by the way, what were they down? 4-0 in the first inning. They had to come back and win that game. They had a team meeting and people are like, oh my God, team meeting in May, in March. Like, that's ridiculous. No, that was good because they got spanked the first 2 days. They came out, they won, and now they're on a winning streak. And it's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be pretty. They'll probably sit around 500 or a little below all year. But at the end of the day, they're going to show progress and they're going to be scrappy and they're going to be a team that's going to be hard to beat on a nightly basis, especially if Trout stays healthy.
We're having our friend Fernando Ramirez cover the Padres at the beginning of this season just to see how they do. Again, you know, they went into last season really with all these high hopes and expectations, clearly didn't pan out. Your thoughts on the Padres as we enter this season, small sample size, but your thoughts on the Padres?
I think they're going to finish second to last, just in front of the Rockies.
Yeah.
You know, I think the Giants got way better I think they showed that for the multitude of that series. I think the Diamondbacks are still excellent.
Yeah.
Right. And at the end of the day, I think the Dodgers are excellent. So.
Yeah. You know, with the Padres, it was one of those things where, you know, I was so excited for them to be good. And when the Dodgers and Padres met up in the postseason a couple times, you're thinking, like, this could be the start of something great. Obviously, that has not been the case. Switching gears a little bit more to the National Football League, your San Francisco 49ers, again, they, you know, right at the cusp of winning it all. They got to the Super Bowl a year ago. The draft is coming up, and you have your mock draft coming up on the Sporting Tribune. I'm going to start with San Francisco just because, you know, not that they have a high pick, but just because you follow them closely. Who are your favorites to get to the Super Bowl? And do you still think the Chiefs and San Francisco are the top two teams?
I don't think the Chiefs will get to the Super Bowl next year. I don't think they'll get close. That's a crazy take. But Rashee Rice, what's happened with him?
Yeah.
He was their best receiver, Arash. I know they got Marquise Brown. Marquise Brown cares about his brand name more than he cares about football. Okay, yeah. Like we've seen that over the past few years. He hasn't really lived up to the hype, even with his college teammate in Kyler Murray. So at the end of the day, like he has one receiver. Yeah, he made it last year. Defensively, they lost Legarius Sneed. That's huge. Yeah. They need to draft a corner. And at the end of the day, football's tough. Like Joe Burrow, I can see absolutely beating Mahomes next year. I can see Allen getting over the hump. We just don't know. I know they keep getting lucky, and their talent creates luck, right, because they prepare for those opportunities, and Reed is by far the best play caller in the NFL. I think we're going to see a different AFC champion, and I think we're probably going to see a different NFC champion. It's probably going to be Green Bay or Detroit. I mean, it's so hard emotionally right after to lose the Super Bowl to get back. I mean, who's the last team to do it? The Bills, who lost three straight. I mean, crazy how they lost three straight. The Niners are the Bills of the new era. I mean, they lose every year in the NFC Championship or Super Bowl. Odds are if they're healthy, they'll be back. Kyle Shanahan has never lost before the NFC Championship with a healthy 49ers team. So, I mean, odds are they're going to be back. He's still, I mean, people calling for his job are ridiculous. He's still a top three coach. Even if he chokes in the bowl, I'm fine choking to arguably the greatest player in the history of the game or someone on that, like, you know, games they should have won. Yeah, cool. He coached way better this Super Bowl than the first time. Okay. I'll take the incremental increase. And by the way, one team can win every year, Arash. I just want to see one for them. I don't think it'll be next year. I think the Packers are good. I think, you know, Jordan Love is excellent. I think the Lions are good. I think the Bears are going to surprise people and make the playoffs with 10 wins.
As I mentioned, you've been tracking the draft. You have your mock draft coming up. If you have it in front of you, if you've memorized it, what are the top 10 picks? Again, I think it'll be a quarterback heavy draft in terms of the top three, but to take us through your top 10 picks, I guess.
Yes. And the mock draft will be out soon. I'm really taking my time with it to make sure all the picks, all 30, you know, the first round, the whole first round are available and in-depth analysis. The top 10, Caleb's going one. I have Drake May going two. And I think Minnesota is going to have to trade up to two to select Drake May. That's kind of where I'm at right now. Yeah. I think Minnesota will trade up. Jane Daniels, three. And I think this McCarthy thing is a smokescreen, to be honest with you, Arash. I think I don't see how any team in their right mind, maybe if they were in a mental institution, would take McCarthy in the top 10. No offense. I mean, we see every year a guy that goes up really high that has no business being in the top 10. He was on a great team. He reminds me, you know, he reminds me a lot. Your boy, Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah, Jimmy
with G. A little more. I mean, and that's fine. He can be a decent NFL player. He's just not going to be excellent, right? So I have all the receivers. I have the Chargers, by the way, if you're listening, Chargers fans. Marvin Harrison Jr. at five. Okay. So that's a plus. But yeah, I mean, this is one of the most talented draft classes ever, and I think the coverage is going to be elite for the draft class. It's going to be great because this is really a special moment to be a part of if you're an NFL fan.
There was a lot of talk with the Chargers if they were going to go with an offensive lineman like Joe Alt from Notre Dame. Why do you again, they lost their top two wide receivers, so it would make sense that they go receiver. But why do you like them to go with a wide receiver with their top five pick?
I mean, if they go tackle, the Charger fans will riot.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't have Quinnen Johnston being your wide receiver one after the season he had last season. Like, you're setting Herbert up to fail. Poor guy. Like, you need a weapon. Even if they trade back, get a receiver late in the draft if they get accumulate picks. But Yeah, I like the Chargers. I think the Rams will get a steal with Latu at 19. I think he'll fall to them. And I think Latu is a Pro Bowler right away, almost in the NFL. So the Rams are, by the way, Niners window's closing because the Rams are getting better and the Rams are close to closing that gap and the Seahawks are getting better and the Cardinals are getting better. So I think the time to do it to win the Super Bowl is last year for the Niners because everyone just keeps getting better.
It's amazing the way that the Rams have drafted again, just historically speaking. I mean, they've done a very good job. Just because you brought his name up, I mean, you know, Carson Wentz just signed with the Chiefs to be their backup. I mean, Sean McVay, I think obviously the golden example is Baker Mayfield basically being like outcasted within the league, signs with the Rams, wins a couple of games, and all of a sudden gets a big contract with Tampa Bay. Do you think that there could be a second act for Jimmy G? Again, Matthew Stafford, we'll see how healthy he will be. But, you know, having Jimmy G play under Sean McVay, I would imagine he's going to play a couple of games. I mean, just because of, you know, not that you want Stafford to get hurt, but just historically speaking, you're probably going to miss a game or two. Do you like Jimmy G with Sean McVay?
Absolutely. I think it's the perfect offense for Jimmy G. I mean, he likes to get the ball out quick to slot receivers. And you got Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp, the two best slot receivers in the game, right on the same team, pretty much. Like, that's a perfect complement. As long as they're not, he won't be able to throw the long ball, but if he gets to his receivers in space, which McVay will implement, he's excellent at it. I think Jimmy he'll look like a stud in both of those games he plays that you mentioned. I mean, he'll look like a stud and he'll get another job. He'll have a second act. I truly believe it.
Listen, I think he's going to enjoy being in Los Angeles as well, right? I mean, I think he's going to enjoy being in
Los Angeles. Yeah, I mean, we'll see what sponsorships from Chatsworth reach out to Mr. Jimmy G, and we won't say why, but Chatsworth and Canoga Park will be calling Jimmy G for some sponsorships if they haven't already.
By the way, speaking of that, I mean, the Rams are moving their practice facility to Woodland Hills. They're going to the Valley, so he's
close.
He's not going to have to commute.
Maybe there'll be a Boogie Nights too with Jimmy G starring in it. Who knows? Maybe you know, the Valley, your neck of the woods, or
Rock. Oh, yeah.
Maybe they make a Boogie Nights too with Jimmy G star. Maybe he's in the movie industry next.
By the way, like, what an amazing time for the Valley. You got the Lisa Vanderpump spinoff show, the Valley, because all of their crew moved to the Valley. The Rams are moving into a new practice facility in Woodland Hills. So a lot of exciting things going on. But yeah, listen, I mean, we have a lot to get into. Stretch run of the NBA season, getting ready for the Final Four. Major League Baseball is up and running. So we have a lot to get into as we, progress here. And by the way, we have spring football. We'll see how the UFL does. But all right, Brandon, you're the best. We'll have you back on tomorrow. That is all the time we have for today. Let's do it again tomorrow. Until then, this is Arash Markazi saying stay safe, stay healthy.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio. Hustle for the cash, so it's hard to knock it. Everybody got their own thing, currency chasing. Worldwide through the hard times, worrying faces. Shed tears as we bury brothers close to heart. What was a friend?